We acknowledge the traditional owners of country throughout Australia and recognise their continuing connection to land, waters and culture. We pay our respects to their elders past, present and emerging. This is Cheryl from Djadjawarong country.
Hello and welcome to episode 127 of the Beyond 90 pod. This is Eric Sobihano hosting our last podcast before Christmas. We hope all your Christmas plans are going swimmingly and the occasion won't be too stressful for you. But as always, we've had another somewhat stressful week, some somewhat fun week in women's football. And we've got a trio for you on this podcast. I like to think of the three of us as the most iconic trio since Destiny's Child. So firstly, in Sydney, just like me, Dale Roots. So Dale, how has your weekend been?
I would like to think of myself as the Beyonce of this troop, but I will leave that up to interpretation. My week was good. As you can see, I have cut all my hair off, well, a good portion of it. So shout out to the woman who cut my hair. I put that up on Instagram for all of those who haven't seen it. But otherwise, football sucked this week. Mm-hmm. It was a sucky week of football. But Woso was good. The dub was great this week. So I guess it all evens out in the end.
And in Brisbane, Matilda Card from Matilda's Active Support and the Raw Core. I'm tentative to ask this question. How was the week for you?
Oh, look, it was okay. But I mean, keeping on the Destiny's Child theme, I think it's absolutely accurate that I don't think anyone's ready for our jelly.
You really...
Yeah, can't disagree with that.
Maybe we cut that bit out.
No, please don't.
It's great to get a win back in for the Raw. Pretty depressing times this past week, punctuated by a few bright spots as usual, but lots to talk about.
Yes, and while Madge and I argue over which one of us is Kelly Rowland and which one of us is Michelle Williams, by the way, Stefan can be Farrah Franklin because he left us. But anyway, sorry. Yes, so my weekend, yes, the usual existential crises, good old Australian football. I wonder what it would be like if my parents migrated to a different country.
Football is truly the Sisyphean supporters group. We just love rolling that rock uphill.
Yes. But yeah, on a personal note, called two futsal games back to back Sunday. And one of those games had 16 goals and a red card. So unbelievably, my throat is still in one piece. Yes, I don't know how I handled that, but apparently I did well. So anyway, before that's enough futsal, at least for a little bit, let's get on to history lesson and Matilda's Cap 127, which is a name that will be familiar to many of you, Kate Gill. She made her Matilda's debut in 2004, played for the national team up until 2015. 86 caps, 41 goals. Obviously, she was a forward. Born in Auckland, but very much an Australian football legend. We'll have the full career summary in the pod notes, but I mean, four Asian Cup appearances, a World Cup appearance, an AFC Women's Player of the Year appearance, possibly her most important goal, a winner in the 2010 Asian Cup semi-final against Japan. Of course, Australia won that tournament, and then so many goals, both in the WNSL and in A-League Women. Two A-League Women Golden Boots, overseas experience in Sweden. And not just that, now she's making her mark off the field. She's spent the last 9 years with the PFA in various roles and has been their co-chief executive since July 2020. And this is something close to our heart. Kate Gill is also a director of the Pride Cup. Well done to her for that. But I think, Dale, what are your memories of Kate Gill, the player?
Very tall striker, bullying people for fun. That first season in the dub, she was integral to Newcastle making one of their two finals appearances before being beaten at Hunter Stadium by Canberra United. And then went over to Perth and basically was you know, one of the best strikers in league history until really the kind of blossoming of Sam Kerr in, into the destructive player that she was. She was for a time a fixture of the Matildas. Her and Michelle Heyman were the two best strikers in the league, probably along with along with Lena Karmas. Purely numbers wise, I mean, you look at it, her CV is pretty incredible for a player that gave it up before professionalism really kind of took hold. She retired in 2016, so obviously early 30s didn't get to kind of didn't really get to enjoy the fruits of the labor that the Matildas and W League players do now. Not to say that they're professional by any means. But yeah, she was a wrecking ball, touch like an absolute octopus, and just like bullying people like a rhino. I think she was one of the first women players that I noticed that was, I hate to say it, but like good touch for a big man would be the male football equivalent. But like, she was just absolutely silk in front of goal. I'm just looking at her stats, 42 goals in 57 A-League women's games, which is like amazing. And she was for a time the most scoringest Matildas player ever, which in only 11 seasons is pretty incredible.
Am I remembering correctly that she either does or did hold the record for most goals
in a single game?
Yes, she did. I think
she was. I'm also remembering that I think she was involved in a few of those absolutely ridiculous chaos high scoring dub games as well. I can't remember if it was Perth. I feel like it was Perth Canberra. I have bad.
The guaranteed chaos game. Yes.
Yeah. Perth, she scored 5 goals, and I think it was Perth Wanderers. It might have been the first season of the Wanderers being in the league.
Yep.
And it was like 11-1 or something like that.
Yeah. I feel like there was an 8-5 something as well that she may have been involved in. Yep.
She just beat up on Taiwan as well. I'm just looking at her Wikipedia page. 12 goals against Taiwan of her 41 Matildas goals. They have enough to deal with. Taiwan and Hong Kong, just like 18, half of her goals against those two teams, which, you know, does feel a little bit rude. You shouldn't be beating up on these teams as much as you were, Kate. Spread it out a bit.
But I also think her advocacy role with the PFA, I think, has been a really standout thing for me in the last few years. The PFA really coming out year on year stronger and stronger in support of the Matildas and dub players, and one of the driving forces towards the professionalism of the game. And she's been a huge part of that as well.
Yes, yeah, really. And she also gave Alexi Lalas one of the greatest TV side eyes in the history of moving pictures at the 2019 Women's World Cup, which is a bit of a deep cut for those of you who don't have American Fox Sports, but she was the only Australian on the panel after a certain game and just, gave him daggers, which we love to see.
Yep. Love it. And shooting daggers, just like she used to shoot the ball past opposition keepers. So obviously, we love Kate's work and hope she continues to help the next generation in her advocacy role with the PFA, of course. Now, on to the big news and the news that's made a lot of us feel all the feels. So I think we covered briefly the decision by the A-Leagues and APL to move the next 3 grand finals to Sydney, and that's resulted in multiple A-League women active supporter groups, including, of course, Madge's very own Raw Corps, protesting this on the weekend. Before I throw to Madge, I love the consistent messaging across the Raw Corps, Victory Vikings, W Jets active. Apologies if I've forgotten someone. I probably have. Flight of the Knicks.
There's Little Corner of Yellow.
That's the one.
And
yes.
The Western Corps as well.
Yes, that's the one. The Western Corps. That's so they're all really standing together. I'll certainly love to see that. But Madge, what was it like for you, just as a, shall we say, a protester on the weekend?
Well, look, I mean, it's a really weird time of year as well. But I know that we've gotten a little bit of flack around not promoting sort of the boycotting or walking out of games. When I was thinking about it, I landed on, okay, what's the point of protest? It's to be heard and acknowledged in your dissatisfaction with whatever decision it is that you're actually protesting. From our perspective, it didn't really feel like we are quite small, and a lot of the active support that we do as groups isn't so much about being a dedicated bay that is filled with specific active support people. It's about providing an atmosphere where we hope that, you know, we can bring the whole crowd along with us in support of a team. So we're not as visual as a block of people often, and I don't think it was going to be effective for our small groups just to, you know, walk out at 20 minutes. It wouldn't be noticed. Mm-hmm. So I think our perspective was to, you know, be as visible in our disagreement with what the course of action that the APL's taken in over the last couple of weeks, and also really just in their disregard for the feedback that they've had from fan communities. It's just been quite patronizing, I think, actually. And then of course also just the absence of consideration of the women's game in the decision making that's been going on. So wanting to put a focus back on how this is specifically affecting the women's game, in addition to just, you know, the game more generally as well. So yeah, so I mean, it was, we just took the approach that we're just going to go visual with banners and signs and go hard on that social media. And it's also, it's not the players' fault. It's not the men's players' fault either. So but that wasn't a huge motivating factor for me personally. It wasn't like I think that the players desperately need us, and that I think if we had decided to boycott, you know, I think the players would have completely understood that approach as a legitimate approach to fan protest, as, you know, one option that fan groups, one of the limited options that fan groups have to voice displeasure in the direction of the game. So we took this particular approach. We've had, you know, good feedback and no disagreements around the messaging. I don't think anyone's particularly happy with the decision across fan communities. So I think it's, you know, going forward, we're just going to continue to work towards better consultation with fan communities, and just I mean, and that's not just active support, because it's not just an active support issue. It's an issue for all fans, I guess. But sometimes when we're just organised groups, we can be a little bit more coordinated in what our communication is.
Mm. I'd agree with all of that. The point that you make around the consistency of messaging is extremely important in whether that be a strike action or any kind of, I guess you would call it industrial action in this sense, is that, you know, unity is as important as action as a whole. Unity of message, unity of purpose, and unity of commitment, I guess. It was really good to see that, as you said, I think the point that you make around, like, if you were to walk out, what does that show as a block? Because, I mean, for most of these groups, they're only like 10 or 15 people. So like you walking out isn't really going to show a great deal of anything. You know, you can voice your dissatisfaction in many ways, and whether that be, you know, at work, that could be a go slow, or that could be a strike. But in this case, you know, your visual dissatisfaction or visual communication was in a method that I guess was a little more fitting to the cause. But yeah, I think that the big thing now is that, obviously, with the news that the events that happen at the Melbourne Derby, I think that there'll be interesting times ahead for both men's and women's supportive groups, just because I think that we're going to probably be on a little bit of a tidal leash going forward. There were reports of drums and signs being confiscated at the MacArthur home game. Mm-hmm. There's been a whole bunch of clamping down in the past, and we'll probably see that going forward. And I guess it's It's important, as I said, for both men's and women's supporters group, but obviously women's supporters group for this podcast to maintain the rage and maintain that that consistency of messaging and consistency of purpose.
Yeah, many good points from both of you. Just just going back to what Madge said about patronizing messaging, it's just one of, I think, our bugbears just generally is people who don't engage with women's football telling people who do engage with women's football a lot how to act, which really, we're just all sick of it. Now, I will get to better news in a minute, but the other sad news that we had to cover during the week, Viviana Miedema is suffering a very serious injury during Arsenal's Champions League clash with Lyon and having to be stretchered off. No official word yet, and I think I did see on the tweets people still holding out hope that it is not the dreaded ACL, but the slightly less serious knee dislocation based on, and I think this is based on the fact that they were looking at supporting, I think, her thigh rather than her knee as she was being carried off. But either way, terrible news for Arsenal and terrible news for the Netherlands. But I think before we did cover this a bit a few weeks ago with our chat about ACL injuries and how they seem to be so much more common in women's football. There's just a tweet I found, which I'd like to read out from Helen Hardy at Helen Football. I can't help but think the ACL crisis has a little to do with the fact we are wearing men's boots made for men's feet. I started wearing Ida boots a month ago and my knee pain has significantly reduced. I'm no scientist, but wearing boots designed for men at elite level seems balmy. Ida, of course, a business that's been founded specifically to solve this exact problem of women wearing gear designed for men. So I might throw to Madge. I don't know how much experience you have with wearing men's sporting gear, but it just seems ridiculous that we're still doing this.
Yeah, I mean, I went and bought some football boots. I had to find the smallest pair of men's ones I could find, and they don't fit great. They're not particularly comfortable. It's the same thing like with the uniforms. Like you look at the way most women's players wear the uniforms. It's like there's a myriad of tucking and rolling and to make them comfortable to wear. So it's there's a lot of work to be done, but it's also like there's a lot of money to be made. Come on, companies. Yeah. So Ida obviously taking the lead there. But you know, when a lot of the sponsorship deals for higher profile athletes, like, you know, you want your Sam Kerr to have your Nike sponsorship, but it'd be good if Nike could return the favor and actually come up with some science-led female-specific equipment to go with it.
I'm old enough to remember Rivaldo having his foot molded for a Mizuno boot campaign where they made him a custom boot based on a plaster cast of his foot. And you know, if they're able to do that for a player in the 2000s, then there's definitely room, as you said, Madge, for a Nike or a Puma or an Adidas to look at moving forward with their biggest stars and seeing if they can do more research around the actual anatomy and kind of balance and stuff about women athletes and their boots specifically.
It's like so many other products, they're all about market segmentation. And here's one where you could absolutely do it with an actual scientific reason and make some more money.
Yeah, so I got nothing to add, although it is kind of sad we're having to appeal to capitalism rather than the more serious.
Oh, you know,
stop people getting injured.
I've given up. Yeah. It's like, yes. It's a downward spiral now.
What's next? What's the next item in this thoroughly depressing episode?
Okay, it will swing up, but
capitalism, good. Woo.
I've acknowledged that statement, Madge, and we'll move on to. So, sticking with Viviana Miedema.
Yeah,
sticking with Viviana Miedema. She, before that fateful game against Lyon, she was critical of the Ballon d'Or award ceremony for their treatment of women's players. We don't have to dive into this too much, but just she did note that there were five or six different awards for the men's game while the women only have one. And basically, if they're going to be serious about this, then things like the trophy for best young male player, best male goalkeeper, and top men's goal scorer, there needs to be women's equivalents. And although there are ones that could theoretically go to both, like the Socrates Award, which went to Sadio Mane for charity work. But yeah, just another thing while we on this depressing inequality train, that it wouldn't have, it's not too hard to make that equal. And I mean, you could make it a bigger junket. By inviting more people.
Are you telling me that a French sports publication has not thought about women?
It seems to be so.
Ballon d'Or is run by France Football, which has been notorious for its lack of women's representation over the year. The big thing for me is, if they just put the awards, it's not hard. It's like one more trophy. You already have a deal with a trophy maker. Just get them to make more. I wonder who they would name the goalkeeper and best young player trophies after, because the whole thing about those trophies is they're all named after European players, and Europe famously not very happy with women playing football for 50 years. So I think that there would be a lot of questions to ask. But I believe if Miedema had Beth Mead named as her guest,
the
red carpet instead of being the number two winner of the Ballon d'Or.
Yes, a very unfortunate. I think was it a Getty Images caption?
Yes.
Well, I mean,
and they were roommates.
I mean, that's not even an if you know, you know at this point. But
yeah,
they knew the name of one women's footballer, Progress.
Look, okay. Girls who do their ACLs together.
Wow.
Happy. I don't know. I'm doing my best.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Okay. This is the first time I've ever heard of a couple being injured with the same injury at the same time. So, yeah. Shout out to Viv Miedema for making a worse episode worse.
More history. There we go.
Yeah. Okay. So let's brighten this. Good news coming out of Football New South Wales. They've added Pride and Indigenous rounds to their 2023 calendar. So that'll be something I'm sure to plug in. I'll enjoy talking about for NPL TV when that comes around. So there's a bunch of themed rounds, you know, the ones they had before: Heart Health Round, National Volunteer Week, a female football round and a female football week, which goes for 10 days. Good on them. And NIDOC week as well, which Indigenous round is a part of. But yeah, that's the representation that we've been wanting. And I just can't wait to see like what is kind of surrounds that, what the leagues and what the clubs do. So I don't know if anyone has any particularly strong thoughts about that.
That will be interesting. Women's, the NPL women's in New South Wales does not have, obviously Pride Round is pretty easy to do in terms of the messaging is really easy. Inclusivity, you know, the queer community, et cetera, et cetera. Indigenous plus football is something that we as Australians have struggled with for a long time, not necessarily just the treatment of Indigenous people and the concept of indigeneity, but the fact that there are so few Indigenous players kind of going around at the moment. So I'll be interested to see how they work that in and what that looks like. Of course, I mean, it's a New South Wales wide program, so you'll be able to have men's players in there as well.
Yeah.
And you'd probably have the Moriarty football and things like that mixed in.
Yep. And this is a bit naughty, but I feel like I'll get away with this one. I feel like Sydney United are going to have away games for both Pride Round and Indigenous Round.
You might be right.
Yes. That's not going to offend any of our listeners. Moving on. News coming out of FIFA. So the details were a bit scant, but they are, firstly, intending to expand the Olympic tournament from 12 to 16 teams. They will also introduce a Women's Club World Cup and a thing closest to my heart, a Women's Futsal World Cup. So that's good. It's interesting because linked to that discussion we've had about ACLs injuries, we have to think about the loading, but at least in theory, these things are good.
I think the 16 teams.
Today I feel futsal.
Okay, so let's go with the futsal, then we'll talk about the less Eric niche things later. But yes, I firstly, for Australia to participate, we would need to, let me check my notes, have an Australian women's futsal team. Well, an officially affiliated one. There are like other...
Aren't there three men's national futsal teams?
Correct, the Futsal Roos and then the two other...
That's right.
We call them rebel associations,
and they have like they all have different like apparel and like gear and players. very strange.
Yes, and it's one of those odd things. By the way, shout out to former Wanderer Caitlin Jarvey that has played for one of these, shall we say, Rebel national teams in the past for Australia. But yes, it is. It'd be great. Hopefully that. No, actually, I'm going to say, hopefully it shames Football Australia into having an official women's futsal team. I mean, any of my Twitter followers have been subjected to endless tweets about dull players with futsal backgrounds. And yeah, it'd be great just because it's such an exciting sport. I mean, I'm pretty sure we've seen all seen clips of you know, epic futsal goals from, you know, something like the UEFA Futsal Championship. So yeah, it's long overdue, and it's something that we need. It's something that Australia has had a terrible history of supporting, quite frankly, futsal. But yeah, the Women's Club World Cup, I'd love your thoughts on this one, because yeah, good, it intriguing, but the execution could be great, or it could be terrible depending on how the players get overloaded in certain periods.
Madge, your take?
Yeah, I mean, I think, so like when would we be holding this? It's so yes. when are all of our different leagues? It's that's I don't even know where they're going to be lining up. So and how are there details on how what the threshold of the leagues are that would be involved in this cup? Are we just talking about basically what England, France, Spain,
US? We only have one. Sorry, I think we only have two women's continental tournaments.
Ah, that's
so cool. I don't know whether there's a Libertadores women's competition. Because obviously there's a Women's Champions League. There was that AFC Women's Club Championship a while ago, but there's no professional football in Oceania.
Yep.
The professional football in Africa is quite limited.
But Japan.
You have a whole swathe of countries in Central and West Asia that either don't have or don't allow women's football competitions. So it would be super, super interesting to see how they work this. There's been a change with the Men's World Cup, Men's Club World Cup, where they're going to be holding it every 4 years, and it's going to be 32 teams. So you would assume that would mean that each of the winners of the continental tournaments would take their place in the Club World Cup, Men's Club World Cup, but like women's club football only really exists in very kind of sparse and ephemeral spaces at this point in terms of elite competition. So you would imagine it would be like effectively like the ICC or women's ICC now, where it's the best of Europe, the best of the US, and maybe four teams from Asia or something like that. Asian Club Championship was great. I do know why it hasn't continued. It's because COVID, but yeah, like the concept's there. It's just, as you say, it's about the execution.
You might be able to get a South American team in there, maybe hosted there, because I mean they do show up for an event.
Actually, that's a good point, because Mexico has huge support for their women's national league as well.
Yeah, and it's on a tangent, but good on what I'm going to call Liga MX Femenil for every time I've seen a clip, a woman's doing commentary. That's brilliant. Like, so yeah. And like, at least if the crowds of the Mexican Women's League are anything to go by, they'd be a great addition to a Women's Club World Cup. Also, before I throw it to you two, expanding the Olympic tournament from 12 to 16 teams. I like it for at least one reason, because the format of 12 team tournaments is awkward with the best third place thing. Team thing, and they make the quarters. So 16,
great,
a much better
best
number
third
for a tournament.
Team, but it's always, yeah, it always seems like a bit of a dodgy way to skate through to some knockout rounds.
Also, feel like it doesn't allow for a true contest. Like Zambia were great, but having only one African team in the Olympics seems a bit ho-hum. Just for the record, there have been 14 editions of the Women's Copa Libertadores, and all bar three of them have been won by Brazilian teams, as you would expect.
Sounds about right. Yeah, so also the thing with the third place teams, because you don't know which groups the third place teams come from, it leads to weirdness when they set up the crossovers for the quarterfinals, which can lead to things like, oh, I don't know, Australia playing Korea Republic in the quarterfinals of the Asian Cup while the Philippines play Taiwan. I'm not
well,
angry.
It'll
I'm not
also
angry
mean that we'll go to four. We'll go to four groups instead of three.
Yeah.
So we'll
just, it does make it more lopsided than it already is. Like when you get to that third game and like there's goal difference involved. If there's some stronger teams that have kind of gone, secured their places by the third game, and I know this happens in regular. Qualifying as well when it's but I think it just exacerbates all those issues where if you're the team that needs a goal difference to go your way but the top team that you're hoping would put a flogging past someone, I think it just exacerbates those issues. So let's just make it nice and consistent top two. That's what you're aiming for.
And of course it's, I mean, the Olympics being a career highlight for so many people, why not let more people have the chance to say that they are an Olympian. I know a lot of Matildas that are Olympians, they're very proud of that. You can see things like LinkedIn bios, just those three letters OLY, which you can tell mean so much to people like Michelle Heyman, for example.
Do we know where the teams are coming from?
Imagine it would be one from Africa, Asia, and South America.
Because that is the other thing. Even for the Matildas qualifying for the Olympics is never a done. Like it's hard just to get there.
Incredibly stressful. Like that incredibly stressful tournament in to qualify for 2016 where they had to play 5 games in 10 days.
And incredibly stressful, but amazing.
Yeah, it was amazing. And I shout out to, I think it was it Emily Van Egmond and someone else who played every single minute of those 5 games. And my hamstrings are hurting just thinking about it. Apologies, I can't remember who the other player was, but maybe Elise Kellen Knight. But I think
did they not also have those qualification games? That was earlier. I was going to say, didn't they have those qualification games where the lights shut out? That was for the World Cup.
Yep. Anyway, so I think moving on to some actual football, and round 5 of the Dub was on the weekend, so. Might need a little bit of help because it's been one of those weekends I didn't watch as much as I wanted to, but let's make Madge happy. Let's start with Brisbane 1, Western Sydney Wanderers 0. So, it's more pain for the red and black part of Sydney, but, good news for you, Madge, and don't worry about my people, like we're beyond savings.
Oh, look, how good is Minnie Gorrie and having her back? It's just a... played the first half only, so obviously easing back into minutes after her break, but just an immediate difference there in midfield. And just even her, just having her and her presence and quality there just also just means that like your Ish Norris and your Holly Palmers get a bit more space to be better as well. So, looking much better. I'm going to go straight to now depressing. Mariella Eka also coming back from injury, coming in late. When she came in, because I think we absolutely missed her from the last two games as well, her energy after I think Margot Rubin had gone off with an injury and also Minnie going off at halftime really helped the Roar steady the ship in the second half. But then, of course, going down with what looks like a really nasty injury, landing awkward on and her knee sort of collapsing. So we haven't heard again what the outcome is, but it didn't look great, sort of hobbling off the field there. But it's hard. It was actually quite an entertaining game, to be honest. Western Sydney had their chances. Roar, they had some really great chances that they just did not get on target. I think a lot of that is you've got Hensley Handcuff there who I think really does intimidate, strikers and people trying to put the shot on goal. They know they need to put it in the corners. I think that's, a great plus for Brisbane in that, you've got that intimidating presence to force the attacking team to just go for that little bit extra. My other main thought was I was really impressed with debutante from Lions FC, Tegan Thompson, left fullback. I think Jamila Rankin was out I'm assuming, injured for this game as well. And Tegan Thompson came on. Was just absolutely fantastic. Was probably beaten for speed by Harding, but just really great positioning. That's what we kept on saying. It's like, but she was there every time and just, you know, not giving an inch, and that fabulous debut. And I am expecting some goals and hopefully another double hat trick from Tegan at some stage, like she did for Lions in this last NPL season, would be fantastic.
Yeah, a double hat trick from left back. Well,
I'll take my goals from anywhere, but she did actually get forward. I think she did have a shot at goal. I'm not sure if it was on target, but happy times. I mean, still not convincing at all, but also I don't think Western Sydney, and I thought this from last week's game as well, I don't think they're as bad as a lot of people have been saying. But, you know, that said, like, I think, I mean, Brisbane and Western Sydney, like Brisbane would be very lucky to make finals. But, you know, it made for an entertaining game.
My favourite part of Brisbane Wanderers, which is the banner, I'm going to assume it's a Royal Corps banner, defence of the 6'3" woman.
Very good work.
Top tier. You spend so much time just trying to find the right, and there's some players that I have not thought of the right thing to do because you just can't make it work. But when that idea pops into your head and you know it's a good one, and it's like, yes.
And
I mean, you're lucky because you're also like able to get, like, orange is a readily available fabric color, and black and white cheap paint.
Yep.
Easy as. It's a great banner. 10 out of 10.
Yep.
Thank you.
I just feel the need to explain possibly to some younger listeners if they're there. Yes. So it's a reference to a very old movie called Attack of the 50-Foot Tall Woman. There you go. You can Google that. The first game on Saturday, this is a bit heartbreaking, at least from my personal perspective. Wellington 0, Adelaide 1 with an own goal from Mackenzie Barry. Yikes.
Yeah, tough scene at Casadel, Eric.
Yeah, just I can be very harsh, not necessarily publicly, but in terms of when you still look at the own goals, you look at body positioning. I think she just got unlucky, props possibly a bit unsighted with the cross. A great cross from Chelsea Dorber curled around a defender into that awful area that defenders hate to having to deal with. But yeah, just a touch off Mackenzie Barry. But if we look at the positives, Adelaide turning more and more to early 90s Arsenal men's by the week with another 1-0 victory. So I don't know if anyone's
only
got any pressing thoughts of this.
Only three shots on target for Adelaide and four for Wellington in this game. So felt to me a lot like a game that was very much needed an own goal, as much as that pains Eric to say. But yeah, this game, I feel like this was the game that was going to be won by a scrappy goal like that. Mm. It was either going to be like an own goal or keeper dropping it in the net or something like that. Like, it would either come down to, you know, somebody dropping their bundle or a moment of brilliance. And other than that, there wasn't too much to talk about for this one, to be perfectly honest. I think, yeah, like Adelaide, as you say, like they're good teams win ugly, and this was ugly.
Yep.
I think the thing with Adelaide is, like, so we're talking about, well, they've played a lot of their games in heat. Maybe that's why they haven't sort of really clicked and looked ultra dangerous yet. But then this game, I don't know how hot. I assumed in Wellington it was probably quite pleasant. But yeah, they're still a bit of a puzzle at the moment. I'm wondering when they're going to let loose.
Yeah, it's
if they
a puzzle.
Do ever.
Yet to score multiple games, multiple goals in a game, which is something the Wanderers have done this season, but four clean sheets in five games, and they were like 8 mad minutes away from actually not having conceded for the entirety of this season. So, you know, like I think more positives than negatives for the Reds. Mm. But speaking of the team that broke Adelaide's hearts, Melbourne City 1, Western United 3. I'm sure there's plenty to talk about with this one. Who wants to go first?
If I was a football team, I would simply not concede a goal after 75 seconds.
I've heard that helps.
Yes. In a results-based industry, it is always good to have results not that early. I thought Western United were pretty fantastic in this game, if I'm honest. They did exactly what they needed to do with absolutely none of the ball. And they took their moments when they came, and you can't really complain. I did we I did discuss this off air on mic with you guys, but Kate Jakovic's performance in this as a referee, two really fantastically called penalties, both unsighted, goal side of the referee, and yeah, I think they were spot on, and a penalty save from the Hilary Beale, the Western United goalkeeper, which was an absolutely stonking save as well.
Yep. So speaking of tough days at Casa del Eric, saved a penalty from Rihanna Policino.
Yeah. It was a good pen too. Like,
well, yeah.
It was down low, bottom corner. She just got all the way across to it. Like, you can't, if you're a striker or a penalty taker, like, there's not much you can do in that situation.
Yeah. I mean, so basically the entirety of the Aussie Woso fan base has been waiting for so long to see Chloe Legazzo play. And now she's certainly back in the spotlight. The goal to put Western United 2-1 up, completely spectacular and completely unsafe.
Oh. Absolutely bawling goal. Shit. I mean, the touch to kind of set herself was wonky, but like, who cares when you finish like that?
Yep. And then the cool penalty to ice it at the end. But I loved West United and Jess McDonald faking the Dark Arts time wasting in the corner flag, and then Jess McDonald going, "Psych, I'm actually going to go for goal," and winning that penalty, forcing that handball. That was lovely. On to a Sunday at the same venue, Melbourne Victory 5, Newcastle Jets 2. And this could have been absolutely awful for the Jets, with Victory racing into a 4-goal lead. Pulled a couple of goals back in the second half, did the Jets. But then Victory icing it late on with, of all things, Kayla Morrison's third goal of the game. So I don't know how much we saw of that, but...
Yes. We missed a good quarter of it at the very least. So I saw the 25 minutes and then promptly went over to the other game that we're yet to talk about. So, but oh yeah, Victory were running rampant. It was looking scary. But that first Melina Ayres goal, very nice. The sort of the step over and side foot pass, Claire Faelo, was very nice. Very nice.
Yeah, very, very strong curve coaching or futsal skills with the little roll to go past Coelho. And Kayla Morrison just like
marker scoring. Perhaps?
Yeah, I feel it's critical at a set piece to set up. And when you stand 4 feet in front of your in front of your marker and then wonder why you haven't won the header, you probably only have yourself to blame. But yeah. I mean, we've mentioned that with Newcastle, with their set piece defending, it is a little bit worrying. Also Casey Dumont coming out from this game with what I believed was a concussion, because she was unwell before coming off the pitch. So thoughts are with her. Wonder whether that will mean she'll miss next week. Because generally a concussion is at least a 7-day turnaround. Yeah. So thoughts are with Casey, of course.
Well, I'll get onto it in a minute, but Victory have a bit more than 7 days before their next game. But yeah, so imagine being Melina Ayres. You've scored two early goals, you're looking good, and then the headlines are stolen by, of all things, a centre-back scoring a hat-trick. But yes, Newcastle, it was an interesting one. It's one of the simplest things. Mark the opposition's biggest player when they have a set piece.
Yeah.
Get your biggest player, stand them next to their biggest player, and that might work. But
also, Claire Coelho trying to fight literally the whole Melbourne Victory team after Morrison's third goal.
Yes, yeah.
Just like, Claire, it's not happening. Stop trying to make fetch happen.
Yeah, and especially trying to fight Kayla Morrison. Like, every time one of her teammates, whether that's been with Victory or in NPL, have been interviewed about her, at some point they mention how scary this is. At some point, whether it's, I don't know if Maya Markovsky might have said this or someone else, but she says, Kayla gives you that look and it's the scariest thing you've ever seen in your life. So, I mean, Claire Coelho is definitely braver than I am. But I'm actually not finished talking about Kayla Morrison, because our good friends at Victory Vikings have been very insistent in telling us that January 10th is Kayla Morrison eligible for Australian Citizenship Day. So, perhaps before we cover the last game, what do we think? Morrison for Matildas? Are we in?
When's our next... friendly, surely you get her in the setup immediately.
Oh, surely there's there'll be some Feb games. You would think,
yeah, there has to be a February game, right?
Yeah. Because it's
as long as she's down the town hall ready to get it done, which I would assume she's got.
Well,
a
I mean, dip. they've just done away with the rule that was, I'm not sure whether it was nationwide, I'm pretty sure it was, but councils weren't allowed to do citizenship ceremonies outside of Australia Day.
Yep.
So now that she can do a citizenship on the 10th, we won't have to wait until the 26th for the big one.
On
they usually do it.
She?
Yeah, she's playing on the 26th, but that would be, I mean, that is a good point, actually. Could do a crossover and then award her a cap. Why not? Football Australia, make it happen.
Yeah, go on. I mean...
And look, and she's shown she can score goals as well. So mm-hmm. you want a versatile defender who can...
We love it. We love putting a defender... Exactly. We love a defender in the opposition penalty area.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So
answers a lot of questions.
Yeah, and I think Kayla Morrison could answer a lot of them, to be honest. So
I'm more comfortable with a defender moving up front than an up front player moving into defence and somehow making it onto the World Cup squad. So let's cap Kayla Morrison ASAP.
Yes, yeah, looking forward to seeing that in February. So the final game of the round. So unfortunately for Dale's people, Perth 3, Canberra 2, after Canberra had a 2-0 lead. So yeah, Vesna Vilivojevic scored, which is good for my fantasy team. But just I don't want to turn around from Perth. Credit to them. Credit to Alex Aparkiston. They've needed a win, but it, unfortunately for you, Dale, at Canberra's expense.
Yeah, Perth just, I feel, I'm not 100% not sure on the temperature over in the West, but they really just look like they ran us into the ground. Mm. They had a lot more of the ball. It was kind of 60-40 in terms of possession. Went out to an early lead, which I kind of expected. Flannery and Milivojevic, as you said. And then, we really didn't look close to it in the second half. Mm. Basden scored just before halftime, which would have been a killer. Popovic, the tactics were working. It was a case of the mind is willing, but the body is weak. And it's obviously not an excuse. They would have had a long time to travel. Canberra didn't look like they were at the races in the second half. There were a few moments where Perth basically just went like 11 behind the ball, especially in the closing kind of 10 minutes. And the ball just kept going back to Kennedy Faulkner. And she was the only player back there. And there were times where she was having to collect the ball all the way back from a corner flag, like a defensive corner flag. There was one point where Ilioshki got the ball on the left flank in her own half. And she just tried to send it forward. And she just didn't have any puff left. Obviously didn't have enough of her wheat picks. But not the worst result. I don't think these games are always chaotic. I'd rather lose over there than lose at home.
It's one of those things, like, I think in the lead up to the Hinson goal, like, it was just like a tired sort of clear out to the side from the defense. And then they just went on the attack. And Hinson sort of just dribbled past. I mean, it was great finish on a really tight angle. Interesting game. Look, because I watched the first half and I was like, okay, Canberra seemed to have this done. And then I drove home. And then saw the result and went and checked out the rest of the game. So, I think Perth really needed that win as well. Mm. I think Perth, and both of these teams puzzle me a little bit. I'm not they could be vying for finals. I'm not sure if they're going to quite get there though. So, I think it'll be interesting to see if either of these teams really get like a good. A good run of momentum over the season to really challenge for finals.
Mm. This to me is like a fifth, sixth playoff, this kind of match. I feel like they're there or thereabouts, but like a result like this kind of shows as to why they're not kind of pushing for the top four.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And I think my final thought from that is another Riley Basden double. So I think Riley Basden making the biggest impact in this league by a North Carolina Courage player since Denise O'Sullivan. Love to see it. So on to what I'm going to call our round 6 and 7 preview, because the schedule goes a little bit odd as it always does around Christmas time. So we got round 6 is 3 games just before Christmas. So Friday the 23rd, Newcastle, Brisbane, and Canberra, Melbourne City, both 6 p.m. Australian Eastern Daylight Time. And then Christmas Eve, it's the second Sydney derby, Sydney versus the Wanderers, 2:20 p.m. at Allianz Stadium. Then round what we're calling round seven, Tuesday 27th, 2:20 p.m., Melbourne City versus Perth, and Tuesday 27th, 5:05 p.m., Adelaide versus Wellington, and then Wednesday 28th, 5 p.m., Western United versus Newcastle. So I've totted it up. Melbourne City and Newcastle drew the short straw, playing twice in this period. Melbourne victory, don't play at all, which is interesting.
Head back to last season?
It kind of is, but a friend of Beyond 90, Kieran Yap, did actually note that Victory have a midweek game in January, and it's away at the, I think it's away at the Wanderers even, which is going to make their January, is going to give Victory PTSD to last season when they played 11 games in 51 days. But at least Victory have the rest now, which is especially vital given what we spoke about with Casey Dumont. But anything stand out for you over memory, this Christmas period?
Just on that, I'm pretty sure they, because Australia Day falls on a Thursday this year, so right. they'll also have a short turnaround for that game as well.
Yeah, because I think their schedule goes like 14th, 18th, 21st, 26th, something like that. But
oh no, what a shame.
Yeah.
My big one for this one, really looking forward to seeing a Canberra at home this week, I think will be super interesting because they're not going to want to cop a bunch like they have against City in the past. They're going to be much more comfortable. It's a 6 o'clock game, so it'll be a bit cooler. It's meant to be quite cool this week kind of on the Eastern Seaboard, so that's good. And the other one for me is probably Western versus Newcastle. Pending that result, Newcastle-Brisbane, I feel like Western could put a cricket score on.
Yes.
Not sure where that game's being played, though. But well, we will investigate while you guys...
Dale investigates that. The point I made about Canberra-Melbourne City, I've heard from our very own Stefan Mobus that Carly Rusbacken, of course, ex-Canberra player now at Melbourne City, is targeting that game for her return to playing. So
I hope she gets booed every time she touches the ball.
And I say my message to Stefan, because I know he's listened to the pod, is you talk about how bigger Carly Rusbacken
fan. Oh, it's at Seaford Oval as well.
Oh, Seaford, yes. Yes.
Oh, no.
That's in Queanbeyan, right?
Yeah, it's Carly's hometown.
It's Carly's hometown, and it is also very close to Catherine Ilioski's hair salon, which they do a lovely job. They do a great job there at 121 Hair. Back to my point about Stefan. Yeah, you say you're a big Carly Rusbacken fan. Where's your Carly Rusbacken Melbourne City jersey? Get on with it.
That is <It's> so harsh. don't hate the player, hate the game. That's going to be super interesting. Seaford is a very, very different ground to McCullough Park. It's basically in an oval from memory, stands on one side, but it's a much bigger oval. We would remember that from the infamous Canberra versus Melbourne Victory two games that they played there, one of which was called off for lightning, and then the other one was a 0-0 where Victory won the league that season. So it'll be interesting because Canberra won't really have home field advantage there.
Yes. I'm looking forward to the Newcastle Brisbane game. I think it'll be an interesting one. Newcastle coming off a few floggings. Brisbane had been coming off some floggings, but getting potentially back on track. But I think Brisbane, some of it might be pending how serious some of our injuries are going into that one. So, I mean, I'm assuming we probably won't have Marielle Eka, and not sure about how serious Margot Rabin's injury may have been as well, and she's been great sort of coming in for starting and coming off the bench in midfield, so I think that one will be interesting.
Also, of course, Jets Raw at Cheryl Salisbury Field, so love a game at Cheryl Salisbury Field.
I was gonna say it's a shame that's not in Brisbane. You could have the two hands shaking from Predator, and it could be women's Jets active Raw core hating the APL.
I think the Victory Vikings and the Western core have kind of been doing that a bit. I was contemplating ducking down, but I still have to work on Friday, so damn it.
Same here.
Last week.
I did actually, what I was contemplating driving up from Sydney for that, but I think the pesky day job is going to get in the way. By the way, Western United Newcastle Jets is at City Vista. So yes. It's Newcastle will get their first introduction to whatever far-flung part of Melbourne City Vista is in. But yeah, just,
also isn't that the most fraudulent advertising of any ground? City Vista. Like how far away is that Vista? That's like saying that like Pennant Hills has city views. Like, yeah. Yes. So does Sutherland. When you drive down the hill from Wollongong, you can technically see the city, but yes. It's like only at night on a clear night when the skyscrapers lit up. Yeah, City Vista, yeah. Come on. Pull the other one.
It's like unless there's like some kind of giant slope that I can't pick up with Google Maps. I don't think there's much of
this. There's a reflective cloud cover that is allowing you to see a mirage of the city in the distance.
By the way, I'm glad you mentioned Pennant Hills, a suburb in northwestern Sydney, because it reminded me of that one pedestrian bridge in the suburb that gets packed out every New Year's Eve because it actually has a good view of the fireworks. But be fraudulent to say that the whole suburb had such a view, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, so and also another Sydney derby. So Christmas Eve. So I'll be ramping up my Christmas cliches for Beyond 90 tweets. But yeah, it's just I can't imagine that being anything other than the traditional Sydney derby results, which is a win for the Sky Blues. Now
it's interesting that we've got Adelaide Wellington back specifically as well. So
yes, which is
got a good deal on kayak or something. I wonder if they've got they got return flights and they're just chucking them all on.
So you again. Fancy meeting you here. So let's think briefly, I'll just quickly trot through a little bit of the Aussies abroad, although the weather in the British Isles caused postponements for four Conti Cup games involving Aussies, and that there's more obviously for the ones not involving Aussies, as well as both of the Scottish WPL games involving Aussies. But Claire Wheeler back in the starting lineup. Unfortunately, it's a bad weekend for all of us as Everton lost 1-0 to Durham. But at least Claire Wheeler got 75 minutes. And there's really not much notable. Steph Catley and Caitlin Ford, more full games in that ill-fated Arsenal 1-0 loss to Lyon in the Champions League. But I think we'll move on to something I've tried just because this is our last pod before Christmas. I just wanted, if it's okay with the two of you, the three of us to run through our Christmas wishes for football or for women's football. Could be anything, I suppose.
After you, Madge.
Mine is a huge wish for no more ACL injuries to any player. But especially not our stars of the game.
Yes.
We saw it in the lead up to the Euros, so many players going down before and during the Euros. We've seen, Beth Mead, now Viv Miedema, and then, in the dub, injuries again. Because we're at the point now where there's no coming back for the World Cup. So if we keep losing the stars of our game, we're not going to be seeing them in New Zealand and Australia next year. So come on, injury gods, let's be nice to our knees.
And let's do more research into this so we can figure out why it affects women more than men and do something about that. Dale, any Christmas wishes for you?
I first of all like to echo Madge's sentiment. Knee injuries suck. As somebody who has rehabbed and prehabbed and come back from a number, they really do suck. My Christmas wish is that Australian football stops shooting itself in the foot, as it is wont to do. There was a very good article in the Sydney Morning Herald this week around the obvious happenings with the APL and the Melbourne Derby violence and all that kind of thing. Not to think of a world without lawyers like Lionel Hutz, where we're all holding hands under the rainbow, but it would just be nice if we were all pulling in the same direction for once. I don't feel like that's too hard to ask. And I think it would be easily achieved if each of the parties or parties involved respected each other as they deserve, whether that be players, fans, or administrators. If we all got along, I think we'd be in a much better place going forward.
Yeah, well said, Dale. My Christmas wish is that we continue to improve our support of the third team. Of course, the referees, the assistants, without whom we can't have any football whatsoever at any level. It's still tough for them because I believe they're still not full-time professional for A-League women. So
no, it's only the players in the third team, only the ones who are involved in professional A-League men's refereeing.
Yep. They are preferred. So, but yes, it's we've spoken many times about the difficulty of, you know, players being semi-pro and having to fly all over Australia and to Wellington now. Well, the refs have to do the same. I think of Football New South Wales ref Rebecca Mackey, who has already done a tour of pretty much every A-League venue except Perth now. And so it's they can't be at their best and they can't facilitate the game to the best of their ability until they get the kind of support that allows them to, you know, to concentrate 100% on refereeing, because it's very difficult and they need to be just as fit as the players. But now we'll move on to our favorite segment, Queen/King/Non-Binary Legends of the Week. And I'll shout out someone before I get to both of you, and something that ties into what Dale and I have just said. So A-League men's referee Alex King deserves endless plaudits for the way he handled the disgraceful scenes at Saturday's A-League men's Melbourne derby, thinking about player safety, managing it, a terrible situation as best he could, and certainly hope and certainly trust that he's getting all the support he needs just with debriefing and all that, because and also I do believe he got injured as well, so we hope that's going okay for Alex, because yeah, that can be, that is, was going to be a traumatic thing for basically everyone that was on that pitch and had to deal with it. So I believe they're pretty good at the psychological aspect over there, so hopefully that goes well, and hope Alex King continues to ref brilliantly like he has done so far. Now Madge, who are your selections for this week?
Yeah, well, I'm going to give a huge shout out to Ish Nori. She racked up 50 games for the Brisbane Roar at the weekend's game. It was great to see her family and co all kitted out in custom T-shirts, making themselves a huge part of the celebration. So just an absolute quality person and quality footballer. Always has time for the fans, and you know, just a great person on and off the field. And just in more like, this came up on my Instagram story, and after all the horrors of the week, it was just so wonderful to see something so wholesome. Celeste Bure has dropped into Brisbane, I'm assuming for Christmas, to pop in to see you know, friends in Brisbane, and the kids did not know. So her arrival from the airport and at the house, just getting the surprise of everybody's favorite human being talking about wonderful people on and off the field. Celeste Bure was just some wonderful content, and it's just great to see her back in the country. And I would absolutely love a guest stint. I very much doubt it's going to happen, but great to have Celeste back in the country.
Yeah, I feel like her French club, unfortunately I've forgotten who it is, but they might not be so happy about that, but I mean, we can dream as fans. I mean, that's the best part of being a fan. Dale, who have you selected for this week?
I have two queens of the week. Hilary Beale for her amazing penalty save against Melbourne City, as I mentioned before, a very well hit penalty by Rihanna Polachina. Very well saved by Beale, and obviously her team went on with the win. And my second queen of the week is Celia Cucitini, Lionel Messi's mum, for getting on the pitch and giving us another lovely bit of footage from the Men's World Cup. We saw Soufiane from the Moroccan team, his mum dancing. She was my queen of the week last week. So Celia, you can be one of my queens of the week this week as well.
Yep. So, and as usual, I've got multiple selection. So firstly, once again, Kayla Morrison got a defender scoring a hat-trick. You've got to be a queen of the week. Apparently we'll cover this point again, so terrifying that no one wanted to mark her, and good on Kayla for those three goals. Please Kayla, get your passport as soon as you're legally able to, so you can play for the Matildas. Second queen is former Republic of Ireland and Glasgow City forward Claire Shine, who has been such a wonderful ambassador for those who are struggling from mental health and addiction issues, which she has been open about sharing and that she suffered from those things in the past. One of her recent tweets, "I hit another milestone this week in my recovery, 900 days since my last suicide attempt, 900 days sober, and after 900 days, I am now in the process of coming off my medication. 900 days ago, I made a decision to change and I will never look back. Emotional wreck, but I am so proud." So that's all wonderful stuff. And when I get around to it, I will read her biography, which I got for my birthday. And then my other queen is Daisy Arrowsmith, who is known in the NPL New South Wales scenes for banging in the goals with Bankstown City, but she scored her 20th goal of the New South Wales Futsal Premier League season on Sunday, leading her futsal club UTS Northside to their first women's championship. And I was had the pleasure of being the commentator for that game. So things are looking good for Daisy tracking into the 2023 NPL season. And who knows, she may be an A-League women player in the future. But unless you two have anything to add, it's time to wrap it up. All good? Okay, so for one last time before Christmas, thanks for tuning in to the Beyond 90 podcast. And on behalf of Del Roots and Magella Card, I'd like to wish you all a Merry Christmas. Stay safe, stay sane. We hope your week is full of good vibes, tattoos, razzlers, and men that are not patronizing to you. We'll see you after Christmas.